They continue their road trip against the Portland Trail Blazers. The Bulls have allowed an average of 110 points in the first two games of the trip after allowing 100 points in just one of their previous 10 games. The St. Louis Blues try to end a six-game homestand tonight with a winning record. They host the Boston Bruins. Both teams have won two in a row. Top-ranked Southern Illinois will host Eastern Illinois Saturday in the opening round of the Football Championship Subdivision Playoffs. The Salukis are 10-1 and riding a 10-game winning streak. Eastern is 8-3. At 4-6, the Chicago Bears are running out of time to make a run at the NFL playoffs. The Bears started the season by winning three of their first four games, but have now lost five of six, including last night's 24-20 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. The St. Louis Rams have dropped to 1-9. The visiting Arizona Cardinals built an 18-point lead and held on to win 21-13 yesterday. Indianapolis and New Orleans recorded their 10th wins of the season yesterday and remain undefeated. San Diego, meanwhile, has sole possession of first place in the AFC West thanks to a 32-3 whipping of Denver that dropped the Broncos one game back in the division race. And week 11 of the NFL season comes to a close tonight in Houston, where the 5-4 Texans will be looking to remain viable in the playoff hunt with a victory over Tennessee. The Titans have won three straight since opening, 0-6. That's a look at sports.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can hear the report and subscribe to the daily podcast at environmentreport.org.
Two wars, one global economic crisis, and an ongoing concern about terrorism might reasonably add up to a desire to know what's going on in the world. These things are happening, though, when news organizations are slashing budgets, especially foreign coverage. As NPR's David Folkenflik reports, one small outfit is trying to buck the trend with a new model for foreign reporting.
I'm standing on a blustery morning beside a marina with a native New Englander named Charles Sennett.
So this is out on Boston Harbor, and it is really a magical spot to have a news organization with a view like this where you can actually see the place where America was first connected to the world. This is where the clipper ships first went to China and back.
Sennett covered wars and conflict in 15 countries for the New York Daily News and the Boston Globe. But like many papers, the Globe no longer has a foreign staff. And now he's the executive editor and chief evangelist for Global Post, an online, for-profit news outlet less than a year old. The company has 16 full-time employees in Boston and relies on a network of more than 70 part-time correspondents and contributors in 50 countries.
We think there's a need for a news organization that has an American voice, not a voice that is nationalistic or jingoistic, but a voice that understands that Americans want to know about the world, need to know about the world, and we're going to take them there in a way using what we call ground truth, which is really just about being there.
They've done in-depth reports about the working conditions of people in developing countries who assemble iPhones, an eyewitness account of a terrorist bombing in Kabul, and the tale of the discovery of crates of whiskey left in Antarctica a century ago by the explorer Ernest Shackleton. Former foreign correspondents from CNN, Newsweek, The New York Times, and NPR are among those who are writing for Global Post. Ingrid Cyprian Matthews is foreign editor of CBS News.
It's a unique website, if you will. They've got quite an impressive pool of freelance journalists, and so we saw it just as an opportunity to expand our reach.
Global Post stories now run on the CBS website, but a larger paid partnership emerged. A Global Post reporter in Brazil helped coordinate the network's coverage when a French airliner went down. In September, a CBS story on the diversion of federal funds in Afghanistan was constructed around its new partner's story.
The international news organization Global Post quoted several unnamed contractors who said 20% of their budgets, or more, go to pay off the Taliban.
So small steps and a bit of extra money for Global Post. Small pay for its correspondents, too. $1,000 each per month to produce four articles. So they better have other, better-paying gigs. John Danishevsky is a senior managing editor at the Associated Press.
I would rate it at this stage a noble experiment.
Danishevsky argues those part-time reporters aren't currently providing coverage closely enough linked to hard news to build readership.
They're a little weak because they're a little scattered and they don't really have the resources because, you know, let's face it, gathering news is a pretty expensive proposition and they can't hope to be comprehensive.
Global Post offers most articles online for free and charges advertisers to reach readers. It claims 600,000 unique visitors a month. It struck deals with a surprising range of sites to include links to its stories, including Reuters, AOL, The Huffington Post, and BillO'Reilly.com. But Global Post CEO Phil Balboni says he's seeking to build new revenues.
We need, in the online world, even though it began 100% free and remains substantially free, we need to find ways to make a transition to a contribution by people.
A group of news outlets, including the New York Daily News, a French-language news agency, and the South China Morning Post, pay to republish Global Post stories. Readers who pay a membership fee can talk to reporters in weekly conference calls. And private clients pay thousands of dollars to commission specific reports. As, for example, when an investment analysis firm wanted information on credit card use in China. It's all a work in progress, Charlie Sennett says.
And somewhere between Afghanistan and Antarctica, between the Taliban and whiskey, is the formula that you're looking for to drive traffic on the web. It's alchemy. We don't know how to do this, but we are having a lot of fun trying to figure out the mix.
David Falkenflik, NPR News.
Next time on PRI's The World, Indian Muslims were not blamed for the extremist attacks on Mumbai last year, but they feared reprisals on their community, and they still do. Insecurity among India's Muslims. That's during the day's news coming up at 3 today on The World, here on WILL Radio. By all accounts, the state of Illinois' money situation is a mess. Bills keep backing up, a problem exacerbated by tax revenues that keep falling short. It's the underlying issue that affects all other issues in the 2010 campaign for Illinois governor. But election season itself may be the biggest obstacle to solving the problem. Sam Hudzik reports.
Following the arrest last year of then-Governor Rod Blagojevich, it was just assumed that political corruption would be the main issue in the 2010 election. And it may turn out that way, but for now, the state's dire money situation is driving the debate.
Pat Quinn's plan would have cut taxes for families making $60,000 or less. Now Hines claims
Governor Pat Quinn has been battling one of his Democratic opponents in TV ad after TV ad, not about whether to increase taxes, but about whose tax increase would most benefit the middle class.
Dan Hines has a better plan. He'll cut waste line by line and only raise income taxes on people making more than $200,000.
The Republican candidates for governor are also trying out attack lines on the issue, claiming Democratic one-party rule has led the state to the brink of bankruptcy. This focus on the budget for the February primaries comes despite continued delay in actual action to fix it. This summer, after Quinn signed Illinois' 2010 budget, a mishmash of borrowing, payment delays, and cuts, he insisted he wasn't finished seeking an income tax hike.
We will go to the General Assembly in October and say, now listen, we've made all the cuts you've talked about.
But as the weeks went on, Quinn dismissed an October solution as a political impossibility and pushed the deadline back even farther, past the February primaries.
I look forward to working with the legislature and getting a balanced budget, and we will get that done in this fiscal year.
The problems facing the state of Illinois do not get easier to solve over time.
Lawrence Massal heads the budget watchdog group, the Civic Federation. He says that delay will only make things worse.
We're missing opportunities when we pass a budget that's not tied to the available revenue. The cuts have to be that much deeper. The tax increases will have to be that much larger because of Illinois' failure to deal with the financial problems.
Partly because of the recession, there's just not enough tax money coming in to cover Illinois' expenses, so the state borrows. But even that's not enough. Illinois' current backlog of unpaid bills exceeds $4 billion. That's the state saying to companies and nonprofits, thanks for fronting the expense to do the job we hired you to do. we'll pay you when we pay you.
We're hearing stories about many vendors to the state of Illinois are saying they can no longer continue to accept the state of Illinois as a customer. We've seen in the human services area, the social service network is very much strained and frayed as a result of underpayment and lack of payment from the state of Illinois.
A recent study from the Pew Center on the States found Illinois' budget deficit to be the second steepest in the country, behind only California. The report calls the money Illinois owes its pension funds a significant and continuing problem and warns that the state's budget situation, quote, has gone from shaky to unsustainable. Don Trotter is a state senator from Chicago who often speaks on behalf of Senate Democrats on budget issues. Trotter says it's not fair to pin the blame just on Quinn for delayed action on the budget.
There are many individuals in the General Assembly, specifically in the House, because they're all up for re-election, who are not amenable to voting for a tax increase before the primary election.
It's the biggest issue in the primary, but the primary is stopping the state from addressing the biggest issue.
And that's the irony of it, and that's unfortunate. We are sent down to Springfield to take some hard votes on some real tough issues and to back out of it saying I'm waiting to see if I can keep my job for another 2 or 4 years, I think is doing a disjustice to those individuals who put us in office in the first place.
Trotter hasn't endorsed a candidate for governor, but says he's leaning towards supporting Quinn. At this point, given all that's happened in Illinois politics recently, Trotter says the state needs stability in something. I'm Sam Hudzik.
A group of doctors, Physicians for Social Responsibility, has issued a new report called Coal's Assault on Human Health. It explains the health impacts of burning coal, but it goes beyond that. Lester Graham caught up with the principal author of the report, Dr. Alan Lockwood. Lockwood is a professor of neurology and nuclear medicine at the University of Buffalo. Lockwood says the report also looked at the potential health effects of climate change.
Well, first of all, it would change the temperature, so more people would have heat-related illnesses. Insect vectors that carry diseases like malaria and dengue will increase their distribution. The possibility of reduced crop yields and secondarily starvation. And then, of course, there will be the increase in sea level, which will inundate many countries that have low-lying areas, such as Bangladesh and some of the countries in the Pacific, will be totally underwater. So all of those things add up to making this an important element of the coal story.
It's often noted that the public health costs of power from burning coal is never really calculated into the overall cost of the energy. This report tackles that, and you use that to justify some of the recommendations, including no new coal-burning power plants, cutting other pollutants from existing plants. Realistically, do you think anybody's really going to go for that?
Well, unless you set the bar at the appropriate level, you're never going to achieve the outcome that would be optimum. So our position is that this is the target that we would like to see, and then we will work with people and do our educational mission in order to get as close to that target as possible.
How do you expect this will affect the debate over the climate change bill in the Senate?
Physicians, according to polling information, have very high credibility. So we are a different voice that brings this argument to the fore and hopefully will be a component of the legislative process and the input of information that comes to legislators as they grapple with tough decisions.
You're talking about reducing some of the pollutants caused by coal, but the EPA and all of the government's wisdom has decided, well, we are at a level where these exposures are safe to the public. Why do you dispute that?
No one has been able to demonstrate a level below which these pollutants are really completely safe. So the general consensus is that the lower they are, the less likely they are to affect health in an adverse manner, producing things like attacks of asthma, myocardial infarcts, strokes, things of that nature.
There's a huge campaign going on right now by the coal industry touting the benefits of clean coal. I wonder if you think there is the possibility of clean coal now or in the future, or if we have to find alternatives to coal altogether.
Well, we advocate alternatives to coal. The coal industry, first of all, is extremely well financed. They're working very hard to convince people that it's possible to use coal in a manner that is clean and doesn't pollute the environment. But that's a concept that is more in the future if it ever proves to be practical.
Sounds like you're a clean coal skeptic.
I'm from Missouri on that one. I have,
show me state.
I'm a clinical neurologist and I'm a scientist, so I want to see proof and data rather than pie-in-the-sky claims.
Dr. Alan Lockwood is the principal author of the just-released report, Coal's Assault on Human Health, from the Physicians for Social Responsibility. Thanks very much for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
Poverty and food security issues are intertwined, requiring systematic changes at the federal, state, and local levels.
Never lose fact that if we can't eliminate poverty, if we can't change what East Central Illinois looks like, we will have this discussion over and over again.
Listen Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock on AM 580 to the third annual Hunger Symposium, sponsored by the Eastern Illinois Food Bank and Illinois Public Media.
Earth and Sky.
Monday, November 23rd, 2009. All around the world, the blazing planet Jupiter will be the first star-like object to pop out into the evening sky.
If you're not sure where to look for Jupiter, look for the waxing crescent moon. Jupiter will be that exceptionally bright point of light nearby.
As evening deepens into late night, the moon and Jupiter will descend westward across the sky. They'll set late this evening as seen from mid-northern latitudes, like in the U.S. and Europe. From middle latitudes in the southern hemisphere, like in Australia and New Zealand, the moon and Jupiter will set after midnight.
Jupiter, the fifth planet outward from the sun, has more known moons than any other planet. But only four of these 63 known moons are good-sized, like our moon. In their order outward from Jupiter, these four major moons are Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. Io and Europa are about the same size as our moon, while Ganymede and Callisto are bigger than our moon. Incidentally, Jupiter's four major moons are visible in backyard telescopes.
So be sure to watch the moon and Jupiter after sunset tonight. They'll come out first thing at dusk and are far and away the two most brilliant heavenly bodies to light up the evening sky. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. Dedicated to preserving our planet, the Subaru Assembly Plant in Lafayette, Indiana, achieved zero landfill status with nothing from its manufacturing efforts going into a landfill. It's part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
This is the Afternoon Magazine wrapping up and making way for the world, which is coming up next, here on Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM.